Hi everybody and welcome to Two Off the First. It's October the 3rd, 2023. I'm Brian Balaji. It's great to have you here with us. We're going to talk about two stories today, one Ryder Cup related and one will just be a surprise. But we are presented by our friends at Swannies Golf. Check them out at swannies.co. Use the promo code GolfNewsNet25, GolfNewsNet25 to get 25% off your first order. Fall's here. It's hoodie season. It is jacket season. It is pullover season. And not like the light pullovers, like the ones with a little padding. Oh, and the stuff that Swannies has is excellent. It's awesome. Color blocks and some. They've got a corduroy pullover for one that I'm super excited about. And it's all at reasonable prices. Great styling. Good fits. Swannies.co. SWANNIES.co. So let's start with something that I will admit is a little bit wonky, but if you're listening to a daily golf podcast where one dude breaks down two stories every day, then you're probably golf wonk too. So I'm happy you're here for it. But the story is the long-term trend line for Ryder Cup viewership. So the good folks at Sports Business Journal, Josh Carpenter, who's great over there, does a lot of the golf stuff, and he is a great follow on X or Twitter. Josh A. Carpenter is his handle. He tweeted out the viewership numbers for Saturday and Sunday, actually did Friday as well, for the Ryder Cup that just passed over in Italy, and did the numbers. And the Saturday number was about 1.4 million people, and the Sunday number was actually less, 1.3 million people. If you want to be really specific, it was 1.414 million people on Saturday, 1.315 million people on Sunday. Now, you could say that because it started in Italy, so you had a six-hour time difference instead of five, perhaps that turned off some people just a little, but I don't think that makes that much of a difference to the viewership, because whenever it's in Europe, it's either so far historically been a five or six-hour time difference. So I don't think that matters a whole lot. Maybe the length of coverage matters to it a little bit. These are averages, right? So the average here is over maybe a slightly longer duration. Obviously, the U.S. was down 5 points going into it. They wound up losing by 5 points. But would never happen, despite some glimmers of hope that maybe the United States could stage an unprecedented comeback, the viewership never caught on. There was never any buzz that suggested people should watch it, unlike in 2012 at the Miracle at Medina. 6 million people watched that last day on average, which means it probably peaked somewhere in the 7 to 8 or 9 million range of people. That never happened here. And then you put it into comparison with Ryder Cups that have been in Europe going back to 2010, which is really the last genuinely close Ryder Cup from start to finish. Because I understand 2012, the Miracle at Medina, 10-6 comeback for Europe, very emotional, amazing scenes. However, that was a blowout in the making and probably should have been a blowout. That was the last one that was close, but it was one that probably shouldn't have been close. And we're trying to separate out the ones that are in the United States, because obviously there's going to be more viewership in the United States for ones that's in our time zones. It's just how it works. So trying to separate out viewership figures for Saturday and Sunday from 2010 to 2023, the last four of those European Ryder Cups. So on Saturday in 2010, and then we'll go to 2023, here are your numbers. 2.6 million, very close one. 1.9 million in 2014, wasn't close. 2018, Tiger played 2.1 million in Paris. 2023, 1.4 million. 2010 on Sunday, 2.9 million. Now that rained out and bled over into Monday, because that was the first time I had covered a Ryder Cup professionally. That was my tryout for NBC Sports at the time. That long backstory, you don't need to hear about that. But that spilled over into a Monday. So 2.9 million on Sunday. 2.2 million for Sunday 2014, 2.5 million for 2018 on Sunday, when you knew the result. And then this year, 1.3 million on Sunday. So for the first time, the number actually went down from Saturday to Sunday. The audience was less on Sunday than Saturday in a Road Rider Cup for the first out of those four. Now, that could be a lot of things, right? The Americans were down 5 going into Sunday. Historically, we know that is an insurmountable lead, right? No one's coming back from, no one has come back from that. Doesn't mean it'll never happen, but no one is yet to come back from that. So that probably was a huge turnoff. Second, I imagine some people were turned off by Hatgate and the screaming and shouting between Joe LaCava and Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy and Bones McKay. I'm sure there was some turnoff too from people that heard about the Hatgate thing from Jamie Weir. We're like, these guys are just so selfish. You know, I don't want to support this. I'm sure there was some to that. Obviously, also has to be acknowledged, we had no Tiger. We had no Phil. I don't think Dustin Johnson is a huge draw, but he wasn't there. Bryson at one time was a draw. I don't think he is now, but he wasn't there. So there are a lot of contributing factors here. But if you look at the long-term trend line, going from 2010, which was legitimately close, to 2023, when 14, 18, and 23 weren't anywhere near close, you can see that the audience is disinterested in this product. And then I think the other thing that we have to reckon with here is the commercial load. Now, I obviously didn't watch the NBC coverage of the Ryder Cup. That wasn't on in Italy. That was the world feed, and I thought the world feed was great. And that was what they showed on the big screens at Marco Simone. So when you're out there watching the golf, that's what you catch. In the United States, that would have been the NBC feed, I'm pretty sure. I don't remember that very well from 2016 anymore, but it probably will be that in 2025 at Bethpage. Still, the complaining about the commercial load from the second Friday coverage started was apparent. That NBC was jamming commercials every which way that they could and making the viewing experience, frankly, terrible, unwatchable. And they're trying to pay off all of the money that they have paid in rights fees for an enormously long contract to the Ryder Cup. And it shows. It really shows. And it borders, in my opinion, on a disdain for the viewer. That they don't care that you have a bad viewing experience. They don't care that you can see important shots in playing through. They don't care that they miss entire holes of matches, even though at one time for 2/3 of the competition, there's never more than 4 matches. There's never more than 8 golfers or 16 golfers on the golf course at one time. And still, they miss entire holes. They miss entire shots. And yes, Solheim coverage was worse, way worse, yet still, when people want to, you know, my part of the world are like, yeah, we'd love to see better coverage or more equal coverage for men's and women's golf. This is not what people had in mind. A terrible viewing experience for one of the biggest events in golf. And we are at a stage now with this competition where 14 wasn't close, 16 wasn't close, 18 wasn't close, 21 definitely wasn't close, and 23 was closer than it seemed. But it wasn't that close either. That's 5 in a row that are just blowouts and nowhere near it. And you were a lazy Sunday away from another one in 2012. So you almost had 6 in a row. That is bad for a competition that prides itself on being close and passionate and every point mattering and getting down to the bitter end. When in reality, for the last 5 of these, Sunday didn't matter. It just didn't matter. And that's not good. I think you could argue that this is on a similar trajectory now as the President's Cup, where 6 years ago, there was a realistic possibility that this thing was going to end on Saturday at Liberty National. Fortunately, it got a whole lot more interesting at Quail Hollow, and I think it will be quite interesting, actually, at Royal Montreal next year. And I say that because Sun J-im and Siwoo Kim wound up winning that gold team medal in the Asian Games, so they get to play. They can be on the President's Cup team instead of conscripted military service. So that's great news for them. And I think that there is a bigger trend line toward that being a more interesting competition because of some of the format changes. I also think they get it right. I actually like that the President's Cup is 4 days. And I know some people probably don't like that, but it makes more sense because Thursday, as the last day of waiting before this thing starts at the Ryder Cup, is just interminable. It is crummy. There's no good content. There's an opening ceremony where, you know, we spend too much time parading around the players and their wives or girlfriends as though they're, you know, models and wearing chic clothing. And I don't care about any of that. I don't know about you. But I'm here to watch the golf. I'm here to watch the best players in the world play competitive golf. And I'd much rather they say, we have one session on Thursday and one session on Friday, and we have concerts each day after or something, or some entertainment otherwise after on Thursday and Friday. And that's how we do it. It's better. The President's Cup is better in that regard. And the end result here is a viewership number that is abhorrent. It's terrible. And Friday was not good either. I mean, it was basically down 40% from the last one in Paris. So, and that was over a longer duration, so perhaps that average doesn't make quite as much sense. But it is very stark, the difference on the weekend. Basically, half. Little more than half, like 60, 40% drop off. I mean, that is terrible. Truly terrible. And I don't know what fixes this. And I've seen many arguments made about how to make the Ryder Cup better. I don't feel like we have enough time here to kind of go over all of those. Maybe we do. But I am not at the point where I'm willing to just blow up this format, blow up everything about it, just in the name of trying to make it more competitive. But at the same time, the audience has made it plainly obvious. If Tiger and Phil, especially Tiger, are not going to participate in this thing, then it's got to be close to get people's attention. Because money has turned people off to this sport, even though they like the signature events or the elevated or designated events. They liked those. The viewership was up on those generally across the board. But otherwise, viewership was down. It was just down the whole year. Now, it wasn't down a ton because they found some tournaments that had higher profiles because of their designated status. But if I remember right, CBS said something like they were up 3% for the year on total viewership, on average total viewership. And the reason that was the case is because they had the FedEx Cup playoffs. It had nothing to do with the other tournaments that they normally show, which were generally down across the board, because the PGA Tour has now created a schedule where a lot of events, frankly, just don't matter. And that drop in interest, again, probably a ton of factors there. Tiger not being there, the money, just other things, golf boom, the golf on TV boom kind of being over, the commercial load. I mean, lots of stuff has turned people away from golf, I think. But we need to kind of wrap our heads around this real quick as an industry. Obviously, I'm not one of those people who's going to be doing that. But spoiler alert, one of the big projects that I'm, the biggest project that I'm working on is the creation of a 24/7 TV channel around golf and golf programming that will air on streaming services either the end of this year or early next year. December or January is the time frame for the launch. And it is very important to me as an owner of this, as the owner of this, to create a concept that is financially viable, but also not insulting to the viewer and gives people a reason to stick around and continue watching it, because there won't be a commercial load that is so disruptive to the experience that it makes it unwatchable. And we have worked hard in creating this product, creating this channel with ways of sponsorship and commercial involvement that don't just interrupt the programming. And we think it'll be really successful for that reason. I hope some of it gets copied in golf on TV, because we're going to be showing golf on TV. That's another spoiler. We got some live golf coming to this channel, which I'm very excited about. But the viewing experience in golf right now is terrible. The culture around golf and money is terrible. And I don't know what extricates us from that anytime soon. And I'm not even sure that you can. So I don't think necessarily in 25 when the Bethpage hosts that the ratings are going to be as atrocious for a home Ryder Cup, so to speak, as an away one. But probably because it'll be a blow on the American side. But nevertheless, I still think this long-term trend line is very disturbing for the Ryder Cup and for the PGA of America and for Ryder Cup Europe. Who, by the way, Ryder Cup Europe did a great job putting on this thing. They were fantastic. The venue was great. The Italian government, the Roman government, they did a great job with the logistics of it. They got people in and out of the venue as best they could. The buses ran on time. The trains ran on time. They did a good job. And I expect a similar efficiency from the United States when Bethpage hosts, even though it's going to be awfully tricky getting on and off Long Island, but and very expensive. Nevertheless, the in-person experience may be great, but the television experience clearly needs some work. So we'll figure that out along the way and go from there, I suppose. All right, let's talk about the second story today. And that is kind of a combined story, and it won't be as long, just kind of a shorter one. But this is a really big week in professional golf for developmental tours. The Korn Ferry Tour Championship is this week. It is in Indiana at Victoria National for the final time. Then our friends at French Lick Resort will take it over for the next 5 years from there. United Leasing is the title or presenting sponsor of the event. They're based in the area, so they kind of helped usher the event over to French Lick and the die course there. So we'll be going there the next several years, which I'm very excited about. I love French Lick, obviously. And then in Florida, the Epson Tour Championship will be held. So in the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, 30 spots to the PGA Tour on the line, top 30 finishers in points at the end of this week. There are only 75 players in the field. It's a no-cut event. So everyone has an opportunity, hypothetically, to earn 600 Korn Ferry Tour points that could help them out tremendously, if not give them an automatic boost to the PGA Tour. I think pretty much if you win, you're in the PGA Tour 30 for next year. There's a 108-player field for the Epson Tour Championship. Win close to in, but not necessarily, because it's one of the bigger purses of the year, but you got to get into the top 10 in earnings for the year to get an LPGA Tour card for next year. And that's going to be a great event too. It's weeks like this that are antithetical in many ways to the money stuff that's been the subject of a lot of things on this podcast over the last year since we've started it. And I love it for that reason. But it needs more attention. The Korn Ferry Tour Championship will get four rounds of coverage on Golf Channel, which is good. That's one of the few events that actually gets four rounds of coverage. I think there's maybe 7 to 8, maybe 10 events. Not even half their schedule gets on TV. And the Epson Tour, none of their events get on TV, at least for now. Wink, wink. And they need more attention. And to that end, I want to touch on a brief story kind of connected to this. The LPGA, the Financial Times reported on this today, or maybe it was yesterday. I think it was today, that the LPGA is close to naming a strategic investing partner firm that will help them seek out investment into the LPGA and help grow the LPGA. So they're going to try and make the leap from being a league that has done extremely well since 1950. I mean, incredibly well since its founding to get to this point. And they have an opportunity in front of them with the proper investment, the proper backing to really go to an even bigger level than they have been. And that has been one of the goals of Molly Marcos-Salmon, the LPGA commissioner, took over for Mike Wann, is kind of bringing more investment into the tour, not necessarily as as much worried about sponsorship, even though that matters and she's concerned about it, but trying to kind of bring more private capital into the LPGA. And it sounds like they're going to go in that direction instead of where they kind of had a strategic relationship with the PGA Tour around bringing in new marketing partners and working together on rights deals and things like that. That seems to have fizzled out and gone by the wayside just based on all of this information. Sounds like the LPGA is going to go their own way. They've already started working with Fenway Sports Group, which is a partner in Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy's TGL League. They obviously own a bunch of other sporting franchises too. They have a kind of marketing investment agreement together. That's going to take shape. They have decided, look, we don't want to be a part of a PGA Tour that's involved with the Saudis. And the PGA Tour doesn't seem particularly worried about the LPGA's health at this point. So they got to do it themselves. I think that is interesting. I hope that also has a trickle-down effect to the Epson Tour and continues to build that tour up, because that's seen a tremendous amount of growth. Not to the end of the Korn Ferry Tour yet. They're playing for 1/5 the money on average. This week, the Korn Ferry Tour Championship purse is $1.5 million. I never imagined in my lifetime that the Korn Ferry Tour would pay or play for $1.5 million purses throughout their playoffs. Never imagined $1.5 million purses back in the day when it was like $200,000. Like, oh man, they're starting to play for big money out there on the Ben Hogan Tour, the Nike Tour, the Buy.com Tour, all that stuff. Now it is a crazy amount of money out there. And I think that also goes into kind of the bleeding effect of all the money at the top level is come down to the next level. And before you know it, there are going to be $2 million purses on the Korn Ferry Tour. You are going to be able to make a pretty darn good living on the Korn Ferry Tour. And that's not I don't know where that ends. I don't know what the next step of that is. But it feels like that's where it's going, is that ultimately golf will be even more fractured in terms of steps up to the biggest tour. There will probably be some signature series or some signature tour of the best players. Then you'll have the PGA Tour that'll be regular events and some room to move up and room to move down through the FedEx fall. And then ultimately they'll lift up the Korn Ferry Tour to the point where you can make a pretty decent living being on the third or fourth best tour, depending on how you think about it. And I find that fascinating. Meanwhile, on the LPGA, players who finish in the top 80 on the money list may just break, or, you know, around 70, 80, certainly worse than that. They don't break even on their year. And it's very interesting, because the purses on the Korn Ferry Tour and are a little bit less now, average-wise, than the LPGA, taking their majors out of it. Their major purses are enormous, and they're in good shape. But still probably not where they want them to be. But now we're getting to the point where the Korn Ferry Tour, money-wise, is almost about to pass the LPGA Tour, depending on what the PGA Tour does investment-wise with the Saudis or whoever they decide to get involved with. It's a strange time, an interesting time. But this week is about pure golf and the opportunity to make the biggest tour in your part of the sport. And I wish the best of luck to everybody who's involved in that. It's going to be a week of great drama to watch or experience, both on the Korn Ferry Tour and the Epson Tour. That's going to do it for us today on Two at the First. Thanks so much for the time and listening to the show. If you catch us on a podcast platform that lets you do so, leave a 5-star review and a comment. It helps us reach more people. If you got questions for me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on X, Twitter, Threads, and Instagram @RyanBallingy. We'll be back tomorrow with another show, and we'll talk about the two biggest stories in golf for tomorrow. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thank you for your time. Join us tomorrow on Two of the First.